Welcome, lacrosse world. I'm a very sunburned Dan Abern, checking in from the Isle Western headquarters, which is none other than my Airbnb in Costa Mesa, California. Kyle, you're up in the Shire. I don't think we've had a pod where we've been this far apart before.
I feel like we're far apart on a lot of things, if I'm honest. It's been a weird weekend, man. It was the rare mandated, Kyle's too mean, we need to make him take a weekend off. So catching up with all the action consumed most of my afternoon on Sunday. And right before I hopped on here on the pod with you, we're taping this. It's another After Dark edition of In the Crease. We'll get into more detail as to where you were towards the end of the pod, but, you know, tell everyone about your weekend experience real quick before we get to the game.
Yeah, so I was at the Pacific Coast Shootout on Saturday night. For all those who don't know, that is the annual game that is held in California. It's basically in Orange County. Past couple of years, it's been some interesting matchups. This year was Maryland, North Carolina. Last year was a crazy Cornell, Virginia game that ended 19-18, instant classic. But it's a really cool event, and like you said, we'll talk about it later. But loving Cali, man. Like I said, really sunburned right now. I feel like every lacrosse game should be played in Southern California. Just my two cents.
I believe you. It's a wonderful land, as long as you stay away from L.A., I think.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
So lacrosse was, like, straight popping off on Saturday. So let's get straight into the big action. First game on our slate. Hopkins 15, Virginia 13.
Yeah, I think everyone at home in the stadium and on the field assumed this game was over when it was 8-1. Like, all the players' family and friends, like, they knew. Like, Virginia came into this game shot out of a cannon, clearing lanes for Dodgers, slipping to cage after picks. It was a complete and total flashback to how Brown played in 2016. But then, Dan, what happened, Dan? What happened?
I just, like, don't even know. No clue, really. It's just a perplexing
great
loss.
Great analysis. We're killing it. It's early. We're killing
hashtag
it.
Hashtag analysis. But, like, no, this is, like, a totally, like, perplexing loss by Virginia. I'm, like, not even kidding. Shaking my head here, wondering what happened. Like you said, even midway through the third quarter, I thought Hopkins was out of it. You know, I think we can attribute this to a really great comeback, but I think it was also an equally really odd and bad collapse by Virginia. I do think, though, obviously Hopkins won a ton more faceoffs in the second half. Hunter Moreland kind of found his rhythm against Justin Schwenk and that faceoff unit for Virginia. And then just a lot of the other bounces seemed to go Hopkins' way. I also think they realized that they'd have to find offense away from Shaq Stanwyck, who, by the way, has been pretty lights out the past couple weeks. They did that. You know, Kyle Maher got super hot in this game. Tinney was breaking ankles and dishing out assists. And then Connor DeSimone and Cole Williams, two guys have been really great for them, just continue to play well in this game. I feel like this is a team that, given a good amount of possession, it will score a lot of goals in the long run.
Well, you brought up DeSimone. I think the most, you know, fascinating thing about his performance was where he was canning his shots, which was a little outside where he thought he had rope from. He had a couple, like, 14-yarders go in. And, like, convincingly, you know, where the ball kind of disappears when he's shooting. It's like, oh, okay, so that's a different kind of wrinkle to his game and what he's bringing, kind of sliding up to the high side and getting good looks at the cage. I really enjoy games where defense just decides to over-pursue, leaves the middle of the field wide open. Super fun to watch. And this game gave us that, and I am thankful. I think, though, if we're going to talk about the plan, I think the plan was the same for UVA from the start, and it never changed. And that was for the defense to hold and hedge and make the shooters beat road. And it didn't work. It just flat out didn't work. I didn't see any sort of real adjustment. I mean, obviously they tried to switch who they were covering, but that's not, if your game plan is set, your matchups aren't always going to dictate what happens. The game plan should be more important than the matchups. And it wasn't, you know, in like professional lacrosse, it's completely the opposite. The game plan doesn't matter and it's all about matchups. But college lacrosse, like, you're set in your plan. Someone changes it, you get punched in the mouth too many times. You don't have any other punches left. Like, you can't come back off the canvas. And I think that just happened to UVA.
Twitter reacted to this game like it was like your super attractive friend, girl who can't find like a husband. You know, she finally thought she had this nice catch, didn't work out. Everyone's like, don't worry, you got so much talent. It's going to happen eventually someday. And I actually saw like real tweets that said that, like, no, UVA, like, they're just young, like, they got so much talent, it's going to happen eventually. I feel like...
Well, we don't have to...
It's just weird, because I feel like there's, like, this narrative, like, strumming up that, like, UVA can't win big games, but I just don't feel like that's true.
I mean, we don't have to put a gender on it either. We can just say, like, you know, your attractive friend that cannot find a partner. That's fair. That's good with me. Let's be super liberal about it. I don't know. I think everyone thinks it's just going to happen eventually. But what if it doesn't? What if it doesn't? What if this is all it's going to be? Is a lot of letdowns. And we all know UVA doesn't need letdowns right now. It's rough out there in Charlottesville, isn't it? You know, because of the thing that happened. Because of that thing.
Well, they also haven't won
the other thing too.
They also haven't won ACC game in 1,400 plus days, which is starting to actually become like a real thing that broadcasters are mentioning now. I don't believe that narrative at all, though. But at the same time, I'm like, they clearly have great players. It just feels like, why haven't they gotten this done just yet?
So let me ask you this then. Who is Hopkins? Like, who is this? What is this team? Because we've seen them. They've done really well. You know, they got five straight wins. But they looked awful in their losses. Are we just putting that down to early season jitters? Because I don't think we can do that at this point. I don't think that's feasible. I mean, they have a pretty stacked slate the rest of the way. Where are we putting Hopkins? I put them in the top 10 this week. I think I had them like 6 or 7. I can't ignore that they're putting up double digits easily. Easily putting up double digits. They put up double digits in every game except the loss of Loyola. Like, it's clearly an offense that can do its job. It's just everything else. Are we going to keep seeing that come back and develop? You know, everyone, I think, after the Cuse game was like, oh, well, it's kind of a one-off. Like, they came in there and that game was over in the first quarter, which I agree with. But then again, people would have thought this game was over in the first quarter with Virginia in an 8-1 lead deep into the second. So where are we falling on them? Like, are they the front runner in the Big Ten? They have to be, right?
Perhaps. I think that's why this game and this result is so interesting, is that I think in that first half, I was starting to think, like, here's that inconsistent Hopkins team that we saw a lot the past two seasons, where they go out and look like world beaters, and then they just can't even seem to catch a pass in the first half. And I think this game completely rejects that kind of notion, because they go and simply basically revert the butt-kicking that they saw in the first half and actually make it an even more painful butt-kicking onto UVA. So the thing is that in the five straight wins that they've had now, they've not only reached double digits, but they're like getting close to like 20 goals in a game. Like, they're actually putting hurts on teams. And I think just a big part of it is that, one, the specialists are playing really well. Hunter Moreland has never looked this healthy, and Brock Turnbull is really having just a great season. And I think, you know, we mentioned the guys earlier. I think it's important that they have other guys like Connor DeSimone and Cole Williams step up in this offense. Takes a lot of pressure off Stanwyck, Marr, and Tinney to continuously be playmakers. And then they've gotten just other contributions from other guys, especially like Brenton Vallis, who has really come a long way as an off-ball player, really finding spots on the offensive side for really good finishes on the end of Tinney or Stanwyck dishing to him. I wouldn't say that they're front runners in the Big Ten just yet, simply because Maryland. And
yeah.
The thing is that Maryland has kind of owned this rivalry the past couple of years. So, but the thing is that I think Hopkins is in a great position, because I think at the beginning of the year, I know I in particular thought that they could be on the outside looking in on the Big Ten tournament come that time. And right now they're looking like the second best team in the Big Ten, if not the best.
And I think they're easily the second best, and everyone else in the Big Ten has fallen mightily while they have surged. I don't want to get too far into this, but I was having this discussion with publisher Terry Foy. I said, who is the best player on Hopkins? And he thinks it's Patrick Foley. And my response was, how can the best player on a great team be a defenseman? I don't know how that works. I'm not saying I agree with his assessment, but or his choice, but if that is true, what does that say about the team going forward? Like, is it just everybody is varying shades of good and that's coming together very nicely, or are we just heading towards a cliff driving 50 miles an hour holding the hands with Thelma? You know, like, what's going on?
I don't think it's that driving towards a cliff scenario. I think you're right. It's a lot of good players on offense who are very good, and they're finally really starting to play in a cohesive manner. And I don't know if Patrick Foley, I really don't know who their best player would be, because I'm inclined to say Joel Tinney. I'm inclined to say Shaq Stamick because of the vision and the passing ability. I'm inclined to say maybe it's Cole Williams because he's 6'6 and he's a total monster, but who knows? They're a good team though. Who would have thought?
I mean, we thought. We just weren't sure.
Not sure. All right, Kyle, let's give a shout-out to our sponsor, Trimino. Protein is an important part of any athlete's diet. Supplement your protein diet without excess calories and fat by giving Trimino a try. Go beyond hydration with Trimino protein-infused water packed with protein and B vitamins to sustain your game. Trimino has 7 grams of whey protein, no sugars, no carbs, no fats, and only 28 calories. Players, parents, coaches, it's a perfect time of the year to start thinking, what am I going to get my son, my player, after a game? Trimino is the best thing you can get them. It's light, it's got plenty of protein, and it doesn't make you feel guilty after you drink it. Trimino is available at CVS, local retailers near you, and always on Amazon. Protein never tasted so good. All right, Kyle, quick pivot, t-shirt pitch of the week. What do we got?
So we're doing kind of, we're incorporating emojis into some of our t-shirt designs. The Lacrosse Twitter one is the most recent one to go up. So if you haven't seen that, go on the Inside Lacrosse store. It's right on the store tab. Check that out, buy the Lacrosse Twitter t-shirt, and support the most notorious group on social media. I like the idea of pivoting from emojis to, like, I don't know, tattoo designs or something. So like Sailor Jerry emoji style shirts. So like the tiger and like the Sailor Jerry tiger, just style of tattooing. Or Gillette 528, like the Stone Cold shirt. I mean, I don't know. This segment sucks. Like, it's so bad. We were so out of ideas. Like, and the ideas that were good, we already had them. We're already making the t-shirts. But I wanted to ask you a quick question, because I know you're a soccer guy. Who, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, basically my favorite player.
My favorite
player.
Is now
in the MLS for the LA Galaxy. He took out an ad in the LA Times that just was like, "Dear LA, you're welcome," and signed it and paid himself to take out the ad. That's like the greatest thing I've ever heard. I love this guy. I already bought tickets to go watch him at Gillette for the Rev when they play the Rev, when the Galaxy plays the Revs. Who, my question to you is this: who is the Zlatan Ibrahimovic of lacrosse? And I think I know your answer, and I think you're right, but give it to me anyway.
I have no clue. So
really,
I thought you
would have it right there, because I think the answer is pretty easy, personally. But
is it Ryder Garnsey?
No, dude, it's freaking Tahoka.
Oh.
It is. Think about the he does the craziest stuff. Because that's what Zlatan does. Who else takes an overhead kick shot from the half line and scores?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, Tahoka would do that if there was an open net. he would do a no look over the shoulder shot at the net if he knew the goalie wasn't there. I guarantee you. So that's my pick. But that's a quick sidebar. We're done mixing the drinks. We're gonna get back to the thing. What is your t-shirt pitch of the week?
Well,
and hopefully the last segment ever.
I just want to say, when I got to California, I landed at LAX. The first billboard I saw was the big hashtag ZLA Zlatan,
yes,
like thing, and I was so pumped. Do not be surprised if I get back to Baltimore on Friday, and I'm wearing an LA Galaxy Zlatan Ibrahimovic jersey. But
I hope you are.
Quick tie-in: my t-shirt idea is California themed. A little bit of a political statement here. In-N-Out is not overrated. It's perfectly rated. I think people want to think about In-N-Out in the vein of like Shake Shack and Five Guys. It's not. It's more on like a level of a Wendy's.
Oh.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean
come find you saying that.
That doesn't mean it's bad. I think it's like properly rated. Like the burgers are delicious. The fries are good. But it's not like this gourmet burger joint that you expect out of a Five Guys, a Shake Shack, Clark Burger, whatever local place is selling bougie burgers. My t-shirt idea, In-N-Out is properly rated. I actually feel like that could sell.
Well, I'll tell you what. Our next sponsor actually ties into this, because after all the In-N-Out people find you and murder you, we're going to have to find a replacement. So we're going to go talk about ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. One more time to try it free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. What's our next game?
Syracuse 15, Duke 14. Like a lot of the games this weekend, this one just didn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, if you're just looking at ranks and all of that, yeah, this one was the Wild West. I feel like this game was actually a celebration of off-ball movement, and coaches around the country should show this game to attackmen that always put their head down and go to cage and never look to make the extra pass. Syracuse 15, Duke 14 was sponsored by Extra Pass. They bought ad space all over that field. And like, we're talking cutters from all over the place, following up the ball, following up the shot, following up rebounds, putting in around the world. I mean, it was in a weird way a clinic of fundamental offense, which I don't think we expected it from Duke. I don't know if we expected it from Syracuse, and Syracuse definitely delivered.
Yeah, I agree. Really unselfish play by both teams. How many extra passes in this game led to like wide open looks right in front of the cage, basically one-on-one right in front of the goal? I feel like, you know, it happened with the Duke game-tying goal late in the game. Just a fast break.
Yep.
Guy made the extra pass. Joe Robertson was wide open for an easy finish. But Syracuse did it a lot in this game, too. This game was very exciting, and it featured, I think, what is becoming like my favorite announcer quip in college lacrosse, which is Ryan Boyle just like freaking out after a play. Like, one, when Stephen Rafus did the Around the World, he's like, hoo, 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 hoo. And then when there's a transition break and Brendan Bomberry tries to beat the Duke goalie and the Duke goalie stuffs him, he just screams into the camera, like,
well, we need more Ryan Boyle. We need more Ryan Boyle. He is amazing as the color commentator. He really is. He is phenomenal. I'm sure he's not orthodox in terms of like how, you know, like ESPN might evaluate their guys, but he is legit. He's legit. Let's talk a little bit about Syracuse. It seems like a different guy steps up for them every game. You know, Bomberry, I would say, finally comes good with four goals. I think his performances have been average as of late, or even all season for the most part. And I think Rafis looked every bit the playmaker that we thought he would be. And then you have all these other guys filling in their roles in the six, making smart passes, taking advantage of Duke's just quick sliding defense, which quick sliding defenses are, that's how you beat them, is with off ball cuts and movement and people kind of sliding into spots in front of the goal. And Syracuse really took advantage of that. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, there's 29 goals scored in this game. I think I counted when I went back through the highlights, 10 of them were off ball cuts or the result of an off ball cut, or it opened up a lane with someone cutting through to the right spot. I mean, this was a full 6-on-6 offense performance by both teams. Like, it's one of those games where you're like, oh, it sucks that someone has to win. You know, I pretty much could watch this kind of action, you know, on a loop, like put me on a loop and like pull my eyes open with like wires and make me watch it. I'm fine. Like, I would enjoy that. It was the best game of the weekend by far.
Okay. I didn't think that, you know, we've been talking about how the Orange have been looking for their 22. They're looking for their alpha. I don't think they needed the alpha in this game because the whole offensive unit played so well. Like, well, first of all, I thought Solomon definitely put on some big boy pants with some of the plays he made late in the game. Really like the one-on-one individual effort that he scored on to get that run rolling. Great play, and then he had a nice assist to Bomberry. But everyone on that offense seemed to get involved in some way. Bradley Voigt with a nice little quick shot that was a nice little low to high riser. Like you said, Brendan Bomberry with a huge game in this one. He tends to go hot and cold a lot in some games.
Yeah.
Maybe this game is a turning point for the Orange offense. Maybe they're like, we don't need just one guy to carry us like they've done in the past couple of seasons. Maybe we can all do this together. Like I said, so many guys got involved. And they beat a really good Duke defense here. Let's talk about Duke here, because I think a lot of people might...
Is it?
The thing is,
I'm not convinced.
I'm not 100% convinced either, because I don't know, they haven't been too great at the faceoff X. Like, I feel like a lot of the great defenses that, you know, are ranked right now, like Albany in particular, benefits from having T.D. Irlen and having most of the possession, and in turn having a lead and having a defense that can play aggressively. I feel like this Duke team plays aggressively whether they have a big lead or not, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. This time it didn't.
I mean, they flat out over pursue. Like, if we're gonna pick nits, like they have so much athleticism, and I think they lean on it maybe a little too much, and that bit them in this game, because you could see that they were going quick. And the problem is, if you go quick, the second guy has to go quick, and that wasn't happening. It's not like it wasn't there. It almost has to happen simultaneously. Like, there's a string between the slider and the two. And that's not really what's going on. But, you know, for whatever, again, nits I'm going to pick, Duke is ranked number one in adjusted defense, according to analyticslacrosse.com and Patrick McEwen's rankings. But as we know, pace is a lie. So it's tough to see where that comes. I do think that they are good. I just think that they, again, it's just a matter of nuance and getting and controlling the middle of the field, which I don't think they did a really good job of. I mean, you saw it on one of the Cuse's first goals, is a guy running straight down the middle of the field, not getting challenged, and sticking what is essentially a run-up, easy crow hop shot. Like, that's what every lacrosse player dreams about. That's what you practice in your backyard until a coach tells you, hey, that's dumb. That's never going to happen in a game. Stop doing that.
Yeah.
And then it happened in a game. Like, how good is your defense if your defense allows the easiest shot on lacrosse, you know, or the most one of the most dangerous shots on lacrosse to happen in one of the first possessions? In the first 5 minutes of the game, it happens. So, yes, they are, and I think the numbers back that up. But there's some matchup stuff going on. I don't know if it's just the one and the two not going together. But defensively, I don't see, you know, and to be fair, throughout the season, I don't see any teams that are like amazing defensively other than, you know, Maryland at certain points. And we're going to get there for sure, because I think that defense was phenomenal in the first half against North Carolina. But, you know, there is a lot of movement. And when your defense has a ton of movement and it's always on the ball instead of someone adjusting on the other side, that's not great. I don't think that's amazing. I think that they can fix that easily, you know, with a film session and get guys to buy in. But, you know, you see the eyes light up of the Duke defense when they're the one. They are ready to go. This is a team that loves to slide. And they do. And you can see in replays that they're ready. They're itching to go. I just think that maybe the two, you know, and playing defense, the two, you're never excited about being the two. The two gets no glory. The two gets like the tip check that maybe prevents a goal or puts a guy off so he has to change his shot a little bit. Like the two slide is like the least glorious position in lacrosse, you know, that's on the field. Like, you're not doing anything really. You're just trying to fill a spot. But filling the spot is integral when you're playing a team that moves the ball as well as Syracuse did, especially in this contest. Speaking of both these teams, two of the better dressed teams in college lacrosse, you can actually find some of their gear on SidelineSwap.com. SidelineSwap is where players buy and sell their gear, shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college or pro gear. And all purchases are backed by SidelineSwap's buyer guarantee. Head to SidelineSwap.com. That's SidelineSwap.com, or download the iPhone app today.
All right, Kyle. Next game we're talking about, Maryland 11, UNC 7 in Southern California.
I just want to know about your trip to the Left Coast. Like, tell me all about it. I know you ate it at In-N-Out. I know you had some interactions with some people at the game. Just set the stage for our audience. Set it for them.
It is an awesome time. I would even wager to say that it should be on the bucket list for true lax rats, because it's really cool. It's almost like, I don't want to say it's like almost going to a foreign country and seeing the sport like being played, like almost if it's like Premier League soccer teams coming to America. But it is pretty cool because it feels like the people are there to see something really cool. And it's one of the most well-attended games the past five seasons. Like, if you told like SIDs that you could get 7,000 people in a stadium for a lacrosse game, they'd be like, how can I do it? And, you know, this game does it by having only one game a year, obviously, but just still, there's nearly 7,000 people at this game. There's so much genuine enthusiasm about the matchup and about the sport. It's really cool. I know I kind of say this sometimes, it's probably not true, but I feel like on the East Coast, especially in a place like Maryland, lacrosse is almost like a fact of life. It's just like, oh yeah, lacrosse. It's like, it's what we do. But I feel like here people are like really enthusiastic about it and excited. It's like, oh, it's like this cool sport that you can play. And like, it's different from baseball. It's different from football. Like, it's super progressive and it's just really interesting. And you should go to this game that's happening in Southern California this year. So it's pretty cool. And I'm sorry, you know, I heard there was a little bit of an uproar about the broadcasters. And of course, sometimes just the time change and going coast to coast sometimes leads to non-interesting performances. I think some people thought this game was a little slower, especially after what happened on Saturday with the crazy victory by Syracuse and the wild Johns Hopkins game. But it was fun, and I had a great time.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to the announcers later. I have a thing about it. It's fine. No one's getting attacked. Everyone, the knives are away. We're just going to talk about it. we're going to have to talk about it. So let's talk about kind of, you know, just your impressions. Obviously, Maryland got out to that early lead. UNC had that brief comeback. How was that in the stadium? Like, how was that received? Like, did you feel like the crowd was rooting for one team or the other?
The crowd was definitely rooting for a competitive game. And as I mentioned earlier, context is important. This game was a 19-18 overtime game last year. Probably the craziest game of the whole season. Like, both teams scored within the final 14 seconds to send it to overtime last year. But this game, a little bit slower. And for me, the game only briefly felt in doubt. Maryland just dominated the faceoff X the whole game. Connor Kelly did the thing where he scores a lot of goals against North Carolina. And it really only felt like a comeback was possible after that crazy one-handed Chris Cloutier goal, where I think it was like the third straight goal for Carolina. And you could start to feel like, oh, yeah, maybe they do have that crazy comeback in them that we've seen not only this year, but a lot last year, especially late in the season. But, you know, Bryce Young got a huge goal in transition, great goal for him. And that just put a splat to all that momentum. Terps just got another routine victory in this one. There's a lot of impressions from this game, though. And one thing is that Carolina definitely has talent, I think, especially on their starting six on offense. It's pretty good. Tanner Cook, Chris Cloutier is a known commodity. William Perry is having a great year. Justin Anderson's a great Dodger. Timmy Kelly's a great Dodger. They have good players, but I feel like a lot like last year, they're still figuring things out well past halfway through the season. And the specialist situation is perhaps the most troubling. Like, they had Ryan O'Connell, who was an Under Armour All-American as an offensive middie this last year, taking faceoffs in this game. And he didn't take a single faceoff his senior year, I think, of high school. And they're basically marching him out against Justin Shockey, who was about as close to the number one spot for a faceoff guy in his class last year, just behind Justin Inacio, who plays for Ohio State. So it was already mismatched from the start. But then, you know, they also started Alex Basile in cage, who actually I thought had a pretty good game this game, despite being under bombardment the whole game. But that's their third goalie of the season, I think. So they're playing a lot of zone and trying to slow down the tempo and kind of hoping that the game just doesn't get too out of hand and that they'll be able to strike. But, you know, against Denver and against Maryland, where they were facing such big factors at the faceoff dot, it just didn't work out.
Yeah, I feel like teams have a choice when they play Maryland. Like, you can try to stop Jared Bernhardt, or you can try to stop Connor Kelly.
And they didn't stop either.
Yeah, and when you don't stop either one, you lose. And you never have success stopping both of them. So you're kind of just, you're resigned to giving up 3, 4, 5 goals to either one of those players, or 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 assists to one of those players. So, yeah, I think that was really apparent in this game. And, you know, UNC's defense is improved. You know, we gave them a lot of heat, especially last year, Ball Watch City. And it seems like they've kind of switched to a zone, but there's just a lot of stuff missing on the table. You know, you're going to a UNC game, you expect kind of a full course meal, and right now they're playing without, you know, they got this big turkey in front of them, they got no knife to cut it. You know, they're cutting it with a fork. So I think that they're doing the best that they can, but the lack of marquee spots in those specialist positions, like you mentioned, is just going to hurt them going down the road. But I think that they can make up with that if their offense can kind of crank out a bunch of goals and their defense can get some turnovers, which they kind of did. I mean, listen, there was a lot of big hits in this game, which were definitely fouls that were not called. I was like shocked watching it on YouTube. But I think the one thing I come away from this game with is I'm so impressed by Maryland's balance. They have backups that would be starters on other teams all over the roster. It's not just like one or two guys. It's top to bottom. They have depth. And they only have 5 games left until the Big Ten tournament. And I checked out who they're playing. They're away to Michigan, away to Penn State, home versus Rutgers, home versus Ohio State, away to Hopkins. Do you see them losing any of those? And follow up to that, do you see any way they don't make it to the Final Four? Because I don't. I don't. But if you can, let me know.
Yeah, I definitely like Maryland's balance. To me, they're one of the most complete teams you will find in the country. The really only other team I can say right now who fits that bill is Albany, because they have great players across the board. But even so, I think we're still maybe a little not so bullish on their defense. That will play itself out. But Connor Kelly, man, just watching this guy play last night, he has to be one of the most effortless offensive players I've ever seen. He just glides everywhere on the offensive set. He just makes it look easy. And he's been playing at a high level, making it look easy, and he's done it seemingly for the past 3 years. Like, the guy just makes incredible shots. He isn't like one of those guys who like blow you away as an athlete like his counterpart Jared Bernhardt can, but he just always seems to get open, lose his guy, and get his spots. And in this game, like, I was really surprised how many like opportunities from like within 15 yards that he had, especially like in front of the cage. But, you know, to go back to your question, I don't know. The Big Ten to me is still so, I don't know, undetermined. We know Hopkins is good. We kind of mentioned them earlier. I think Rutgers is really starting to make a lot of progress, and I'm still not going to sleep on Ohio State. So I think there could be a surprise somewhere in this slate. It could be any one of those three teams I mentioned. I could definitely see losses there, but I still think Maryland is the favorite to win the Big Ten. I would not be surprised if they won every single game. And I do think that every week that I watch them play, it looks more and more like a Final Four team. And the crazy thing about it is that I didn't think that they would be in this spot, considering that they lost such a tremendous senior class last year. What's really crazy about the Maryland balance is that they continue to play at such a high level despite such massive losses in experience. That's what's really blowing me away. But one thing I want to raise to you, conversely, look at Carolina's schedule. They have four games left, and it's the entire ACC slate. It's kind of a scary possibility that they don't win again this season. Like, four games, and they're still kind of like making decisions about who should play where and such like that. However, I will qualify by saying this. I'm pretty sure I said that on this podcast last year, and they ended up winning the ACC tournament. So, yeah.
Well, is UNC in your top 20 this week?
No, I can't do it.
At all?
No, there's too many other good teams that are like really playing well that only have like 2 to 3 losses that I think are a lot more deserving of that vote, in my opinion. Do I think that Carolina could beat those teams? Yes, but I'm not going to rank them above that.
Yeah. But that's the thing, Lou. Like, what is the ranking then? If it's not who we think is better than this team, then how are we ranking? Are we ranking just on record? Are we ranking on recency?
Everybody's got their own rules.
You know, I know. Everyone's got their own rules. I don't know. I like to combine everything. I like to think that I look at it a little more analytically than this team have 2 lost, this one have 3, 2 lost better. Sometimes that does happen, though. I do want to talk about one thing that we kind of raised earlier. I wrote plaguing the industry in the outline. That's not true. I want to talk about the standard for lacrosse commentators, because I don't want to get into ranking anyone, but people were all over the dudes calling this game, and it was a big old hate fest. And you know me, usually I'm in for that. But we've both done broadcast work. I've called 4 MLL games. I've done some other sideline stuff. I feel like we're uniquely suited to have this conversation as opposed to the troll army. What is the ideal standard for lacrosse commentary? And, you know, for high-level games, can it be achieved with the budgets that these teams and conferences currently have that aren't in the Big Ten or ACC or getting on ESPNU? Like, can you make everyone happy with what's happening now? Because so many people are unhappy and everyone's really quick to complain What's your kind of take on it? Because, I mean, I know you've done a lot of stuff, too.
Well, I think first, I think we're really spoiled with the guys we have for ESPN. Anish is incredible. Well, I'm talking play-by-play guys first. Anish is incredible. Mike Corey is great. There's a few other guys who are slipping my mind. I think Chris Crowder's is really good this year. And then, of course, the color guys that we have are all guys who have had tremendous careers playing both college and professional. So I think the standard is very high on that end. And everybody else, I think, kind of is trying to fill in the gap when it's not really feasible. I feel like for lacrosse broadcasts, it's really more so just finding someone quickly who they know that they can do the job, regardless if they've seen the sport or not. And I think that's one thing that people harp on the most quickly is that, oh, these guys just don't know the game. They don't know what they're talking about. So I don't know if it can be achieved with the budgets that we're seeing. I mean, I feel like it could move that way since, you know, the Big Ten Network has made a lot of strides with broadcasting. The Pac-12 Network is a possibility because they're broadcasting the first season of Pac-12 women's lacrosse. So there's going to be a possible branch out there if there's growth in that area. But I don't know. I feel like the game is growing so rapidly at right now, and the lack of commentators is kind of starting to become more apparent, maybe? I don't know. It's an interesting question to propose.
Yeah, I think for me, the play-by-play guy, his knowledge of the game is less important than the color guy. Like, that's obvious. That's, like, an obvious thing to say. But the color guy can't be some dude off the street that, like, coaches high school. It just can't be. Like, there has to be some sort of exploration of nuance while you're talking about the game, or even if you're talking about the set. And I think one of the roles of the color guy, as well as the play-by-play in lacrosse, is explaining the game to people that might be watching their first lacrosse game. You know, every game might be the first game that someone sees. So the more you can explain without being annoying, the better. You know, so I think if you just find someone that can do that and has a little charisma, I mean, like, I've said this, I'm super critical of MLL people just because I've done it and I've done the games, and sometimes they put people on and it's like they're ex-players or whatever, and they just don't have any charisma. And it's like, you know, talking to like a sheep trying to do the game, and you're just like, he's just sitting there like baaing at you. And you're just like, what are you doing? Do your job. Like, you're making me fall asleep here. But I think that can be achieved just by, you know, having someone that's outspoken. Even if they say something wrong, like, who cares? You know, get out there and have energy and be someone that can explain it every once in a while, you know, and have the play-by-play guy, you know, play into that. I called a Cannons game with John Mita Perel, and we didn't even know each other for 5 minutes. And he's like, all right, well, you kind of know what you're talking about, so why don't you just explain this part? And I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is this. And that relationship, I think, is what we miss with a lot of these guys. I don't think you get to develop that a lot. And that's why the ESPN guys stand out, because they've all worked with each other in different roles. You know, like Kark has done color and play-by-play. You know, Anish has done, you know, mostly play-by-play, but he has color moments. You know, like, he changes off and there's a good repartee there. I think that's really what people key in on when they criticize, and when the two guys are really out of sync, especially when they're out of sync with the sideline guy. that's even worse, because that was brutal. If we're really gonna pick apart this game, that was the worst part, is the sideline guy was like, yeah, that happened. Back to you. Good job. Okay. So my mic's still on? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And listen, it's mean to like pick on that and stuff. But, you know, like I said, I'm kind of into that.
Yeah. But it is also discouraging, because I have been a guy who's like tried to put my name out there and say like, hey, like, I've done college lacrosse broadcasts in the past and I'm trying to do that now. And it just kind of feels like it's really difficult to find those gigs. But then we see all these people get mad about the broadcasters saying, these people stink, why can't we find quality broadcasters? So, hashtag hire Dan Abern, t-shirt pitch of the week.
Yeah, hire both of us. I want to do color.
Yes. If It'll anybody is It'll listening out like there, please hire both of us to do a game. Because we...
Yo, VMI, I know you need someone to call your games. Just consider the Abern-Devitt experiment. Like, think about it. Anybody. We'll take any D1. We'll take anything. We'll have Tommy call up the mount and hook us up. We'll do it. We're really cheap. We'll like dance cheap, but like get us. We're available.
That would definitely be a, you know what, Kyle? Us doing a broadcast, a Weird Watch. Let's go to Weird Watch of the Week.
Ooh.
You always need this. What is Netflix sponsoring this week?
We'll get to that. So as I stated before, kind of my mandated, Kyle's going to snap soon, so we have to give him a day off. I actually did a lot of reading. Yes, I can read. I read God Country, which is an amazing graphic novel that came out last year. And I'm currently reading I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which is the novel about the Golden State Killer by Michelle McNamara, who died before she could finish the novel. She's the former wife of comedian and actor Patton Oswalt, and other people finished the book for her. It's really good. She's such a talented writer. It really sucks that she's gone. But in terms of watching stuff on Netflix, I watched Wild Wild Country. Let me try to set this up. It's a documentary series. It's about an Indian guru who comes to America and sets up an entire city in rural Oregon. There are numerous what the moments throughout, but my favorite part is when they interview the son of Bill Bowerman, who you may know is the guy who started Nike with Phil Knight. He's asked his thoughts on the Rajneeshis, who are this group, after the fact, you know, years in the modern day. And he pauses and he goes, I miss it. I miss the fight. And that's how I felt this weekend, trying to relax, trying not to check Twitter, muting my Slack. I didn't like it, man. Like, sitting on the bench is for losers. That's my Weird Watch conclusion of the week. Don't sit on the bench. Play in the game.
Yeah, so I, too, watched the first episode of Wild Wild Country on the flight over from Baltimore to LAX. And it was definitely a weird watch on a flight. I'm sure I'll like it.
It's not great.
I'm sure I'll like it. But this is the catch with Netflix shows, is that sometimes it takes two or three episodes to really get hooked. I was not hooked by the first episode. And the show kind of came off as very pretentious and self-important. It was like, oh, this is from the first episode. It was like, this is a show that you're going to care about, man. This is going to be like a big hit on Netflix.
I will tell you, that's on purpose. And it totally, like, they play off of that and it totally gets better. Stick with it. I think it's almost like end of the third episode is when I was in. I was sitting there going, I don't think I'm in. I think I need to turn this off. But I hung in there, you know, did some Googling, like Googling while I was watching, kind of got through it. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll like it. I'll probably watch more on the flight back. I've got lots of flights coming up this week. But like last week, it's been another weird week of watching. It's kind of starting to get to that point in the season where, like, I watch so much lacrosse that I kind of need to start watching other stuff to kind of just get my mind off it for a little bit. So one night, I went down a YouTube rabbit hole. And have you ever watched a show called Wild and Out, Kyle?
I'm aware of its existence. Yes.
Well, I went down a rabbit hole and I watched a ton of Wild style rap battles from this show. And I don't know, but this is just one of my, like, the show is hilarious and it's low key one of my favorite things to watch. Like, Thursday nights, like in the summer in college when I was like all alone at my house by myself, I'm like, Wild and Out is on. I'm going to have a good time. It's basically at the end of the show, two teams have a rap battle and they try to just chirp on each other. And some of the moments are so good that it's just like amazing. But the weirdest watch of the week was actually a lacrosse watch. We talked about broadcasters just a few minutes ago, but at the end of the Denver Towson game, it went to overtime and they were like, we're going to go to a quick commercial break and we'll be right back with the wrap up. So they went to the break, but the mics on the broadcasters were still hot after they went to break. And there's nothing of controversy said, but it was just like normal conversation that was just strange. And then there was some whistling of like a fight song. And I was like, this guy really doesn't know that his mic is hot right now.
Yeah, I don't know. That's why I always took mine off. They're like, no, you can leave it on. I'm like, no, because I'm not going to be the guy whose mic is still on talking, because I am not censored off air, which everyone, you're listening to this podcast, you wouldn't know that, but just know that. So
scoreboard.
We are going to move scoreboard. On to the scoreboard. Scoreboard time. And the first, we're dividing this into sections. And the first one is the Patriot League goes to the upside down because everything was an upset in the Patriot League except for BU beating Lafayette. First one, Colgate 8, Army 6. I watched this one earlier, right before the podcast, and Colgate made a good amount of mistakes early on, including gifting a goal off a bad clear. But Army struggled mightier on offense than I've ever seen them struggle. They're unable to finish quality looks that they usually get from mid-range and in tight. And I think that's really what the game came down to. I just think they didn't finish their shots that they normally finish. You know, it was fairly low scoring game for both teams. Again, more of a slugfest Patriot League mentality here. But I want to ask you this. Have you seen this Mike Hawkins kid play?
Yeah, I've seen highlights of Colgate games. This kid can really shoot the ball.
Dude, he is incredible. He does a shoulder shift into a split that, like, moves tectonic plates. It's awesome. Had a hat trick in this game. He should get a look on every possession. Like, they need to build the offense around him. Because we know other guys have gone down in that Colgate offense. I think he's definitely the leader now, and he's the way to go. So, give Mike Hawkins the ball, yo. Let him go.
Next game. Bucknell 12, Loyal 11. Bucknell's actually won this game the past 2 years now.
Yes. I'm never surprised when Bucknell gets an upset win. It literally happens every year. Like you said, last year happened against Loyola. In 2015, it was Army. It's just completely down to their style of play. It's slow, disciplined, and just suppressive. They lull you into a sense of like sadness and slowness with their offense, and Will Sands just picks apart everything like a chess master. He outplayed Pat Spencer in this game, and I think Sands is the biggest riser in my soon to be released MLL draft ranks. He has a cerebral style of play that I don't think that we get to see a lot of in lacrosse. And you see a lot of guys rely on their athleticism. Sands doesn't do that at all. He relies on this guy should be here. The term quarterback is overused to describe players and their style of play. But not with Sands. He is legitimately a quarterback. He is leading people into spots. He is directing traffic with his stick, with his motions, with his, you know, his hands. At one point, he'll take his hand off his stick and tell a guy to move. You know, he knows everything and where everyone's supposed to be. So, it's just, you know, it's a big win for Bucknell. But, you know, it kind of happens every year. No one's undefeated in the Patriot League. Everyone's got someone else's skin right now. So it's shaping up. I was worried a couple weeks back. I was apologizing for bigging up the Patriot League. But now I'm not worried. I'm not worried. This whole weekend changed everything for me. We're doing a good job now.
Navy 10, Lehigh 7. Somewhat of an upset here.
Oh, I think it's an upset because Lehigh has been riding high. I mean, Lehigh is definitely a team on the rise, not only in the Patriot League, but in general. I mean, the midshipmen, they found their missing offense, even if it's only for a game. You know, five players with two goals, nice even split. Are you buying the Navy resurgence or the Mountain Hawks just too far away from the mountains and stuck in the cityscape here? Like, what's going on?
Navy actually just hasn't been too bad this year. They've got some decent wins. This is another one. I think after the Jacksonville loss and then the Maryland loss and after the season that they had last year, that they were sold down the road early and that they had been slept on ever since that game. I don't know if they're resurging, but I feel like they are properly rated. They are kind of just like a decent team in the Patriot League that could win against another Patriot League team on any given Saturday. Basically that.
All right, next section is called OT games, because we had some OT games. Or close games. This first one isn't really an OT game. Sorry. It's misleading. St. John's 9, Hofstra 8. And I have to say this. St. John's is crazy underrated. Matt Hanley is the best goalie you've never heard of. Jason DeBenedictis is an accomplished scorer. And the defense makes you work to score goals. On the other side here, like Hofstra, everything runs through Ryan Tierney. If you find a way to stop him, you know, they do have other scoring options, Dylan McIntosh and Brendan Kavanaugh. But beyond that, it's not much for Hofstra, man. Like, it's they commit a lot of penalties. They play sound defense. Otherwise, Concannon's solid in net. But they lean on him a lot, and they lean on Tierney a lot. And when you lean on two players so much, you're bound to drop a game like this. I mean, I know Hofstra was kind of the hot team after they beat UNC a couple weeks ago. But, you know, St. John's is no joke. I think they're actually a really, really underrated team.
Yeah, Hofstra, like, they've been playing well. So I think this is credit to St. John's being good as opposed to Hofstra dropping a game, so to speak. But the St. John's team, we talked just like kind of like hearing through the wire that, yeah, like this is a team that's so much better than they were last year. Next game, Denver 11, Towson 10 in overtime. A weird ending in this one.
Yeah, thoughts on the disallowed goal? Because I don't know why it was disallowed still.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Two.
Yeah, just there was just so much confusion around what happened because the clock on the broadcast was, like, not working. And then the announcers thought it was a goal. And then it wasn't. And they didn't know why. So I assumed it was because they had ran out of time. Like, it was like, oh, if it's not, it clearly goes in. It clearly was not a crease violation or anything like that. And if it was a horrendous call on the part of the refs. But apparently the ref said, oh, he ran out of time. But, you know, just seeing some of the chatter on Twitter, they apparently misinterpreted the rule. Like, they said, like, oh, it crossed the goal line before the time expired, or it didn't cross the goal line before time expired, or anything like that. I don't really know, but do you have any clue what happened there?
It was a goal and the game was over.
Basically.
That's what happened. Yeah.
I think they had a man up going into overtime. So you kind of assume that Denver, really efficient offense with possession in overtime, is probably going to get the win here. So,
I mean, and they did. So it's really like, oh, no harm, no foul. But, you know, refs, we know who you are. We got you.
Next game, Marquette 9, Georgetown 8. Georgetown, a bit of a disappointing loss in the Big East.
Yeah, I didn't see any of this game, but good for Marquette to get this win. I know, obviously, the two comment kind of caught on a little bit. Sorry about that. They were reeling after three straight losses. Now they're 4-3. Georgetown, weirdly disappointing, 6-2 with the other loss coming against Drexel. We talked about it last week. I think, you know, Beccaro had a great game here, 5 goals. But I do think they're just leaning too hard on Morocco. That defense needs to pack it in and be a little bit more sound with their approach. But, you know, getting it all the way to OT and, you know, unfortunately losing to Marquette is bad. But I think that Georgetown is on its way back. You know, we've asked several times, even on this podcast, what happened to Georgetown? When are they coming back? Like, isn't the resurgence coming? And I think it is. It's just they have to figure out some stuff still. But 6-2, it's not bad. It's just I think we thought it'd be better heading into conference play.
Yeah. Next section of the scoreboard is the rough and tumble Ivy League. First game, Yale 16, Princeton 8. Whoo, just a butt whooping.
Yeah, rough and tumble in Ivy League doesn't really work, but I know what you were going for there. Listen, Yale is crazy good. We had people yelling at us on Twitter about how great they looked in this game. Like, we don't know who they are. And I'm here to tell you, my man, we know who they are. We talked about them last week. If they continue to win and all these other teams in the quote unquote bigger leagues keep losing, Yale will continue to get attention every week. I promise you that. I am also completely writing off Princeton as a result of this game. I think I have yet to see any consistency on defense. You know, they're just, you know, people play them and they just pour goals into glasses like sangria at brunch. It's just like, oh, keep going. Give me some more. Give me some more. It's just a complete, absolute horror show at the back. It just is.
Yeah, so the key stat in this game for me is that Yale won the ground ball battle 46-14. Like, what? That's called opening a can of whoop-ass off the floor.
Like, soft.
That's like when the JV scrimmages the varsity, man.
That's tough. That's rough. That's rough. The next game we're going to talk about, Cornell 20, Penn 13. This is the win that gets the Big Red into the top 20. They hit a 20 spot against a team with the 11th ranked defense. You know, we're using Patrick's analytics at analyticslacrosse.com. Jeff Teat 6-2, Jake McCullough 5-3. Penn just couldn't do anything to stop this like rolling attack unit, this juggernaut of goal scorers. I mean, it's just Cornell is coming into their own at just the right time in Ivy League play. Yes, they lost to Yale last week, but I don't know if they're going to lose to anyone else in the Ivy League. I think they're definitely the number two team. What do you think?
Yeah, so this was like, I think this was a close game up until a certain point, and then Cornell just turned a hole in the wall into the sack of the city, and they just scored like a ridiculous amount of goals in succession. We'll say this. Jeff Teat is not underrated, but Cornell might be. They're playing well, and I feel like Jeff Teat is always like a constant presence in these games, but a lot of the other guys, it's just like, oh, another random guy just stepped up in this game. So they're finding like multiple guys to kind of contribute on this team. They've been in my top 20, and they will continue to be, and they'll probably be rising once again for me.
All right, next game we're going to talk about Harvard 10, Dartmouth 8. And Dan, where do you stand on Harvard? I think they might be good. Maybe.
So what is it? Six straight wins now, right?
Yeah. So since the OT loss to Holy Cross.
Yeah. So they had the crazy comeback against BU. I guess I'm buying Harvard. I feel like, you know, they might be worthy of being close to that top 20 spot. I don't know. They're pretty deserving with six straight wins, and they're a better team in the Ivy League right now than a lot of others playing right now. So, look, you guys know who you are. I'll say that.
Dan wrote down Brown and Princeton, just so you know.
I thought it was funny. But
let me give you some reasons why Harvard. You should kind of back Harvard a little bit as a dark horse here. Morgan Cheek is phenomenal. He's completely changed his game into a provider. He used to be a heads-down, sweeping, you know, dodger, goal scorer, and now he's running the entire show on offense. Robert Shaw is one of the better shot stoppers that no one talks about, and I've always liked Joe Lang. He doesn't have crazy numbers, but he's a major talent. He's going to go in the draft at some point. There aren't a lot of middies in this MLO class, so I think he's going to get drafted. And also, this score was only close because George Christopher from Dartmouth made 15 saves. I mean, if he doesn't have a game like that, Harvard clearly blows this out like 15-5. I just think that, you know, the goalie really bails them out. Let's move on to Sunday. Drexel 11, Providence 10. In double overtime, damn, it's been a rough year for Providence. 3-6, not looking good for the Big East tourney. Like, I don't know what to say. They're in so many games, but they can't seem to make the 4-5 goal run that guarantees them the win. And you know, not to take anything away from Drexel, because Drexel is the homeless man's Bobby Moe. They're great to watch on offense, but they're prone to wild mistakes and turnovers. I think this game was bigger for Providence than Drexel and had the makings of a win that can turn the season around for the Friars. But now they're just like something in a chair waiting for the pizza man watching Hoarders. You know, it's a rough life. It's not great.
Tough life in Friarland.
3-6 is tough.
A big ESPNU game on Sunday. Notre Dame 9, Ohio State 8. I didn't watch this game, but I had a feeling ND would hold on just following the game on Twitter. I feel like Ohio State just it's not like a bad team, but they're just struggling to beat a lot of really good teams that they're playing. Like, it's like every week it's like, oh, we got Denver, oh, we got Notre Dame, and now we got all the Big Ten teams coming up. So it's like it feels like a very unwavering slate for them.
I mean, the bottom line is they're not executing in their final sets, period. It's just they're not getting the clutch goals or the clutch stops that they need. I will tell you that I would have bet you my entire shoe collection, which is extensive, that Notre Dame was going to win. After losing to Michigan during the week, I just knew that two in a row wasn't a possibility. They're too focused, too hurt, and too angry. I was actually surprised the game was this close. I thought they were going to come in and just set that place on fire. But I never had any thought that they were going to lose after they went ahead for the first time. I just thought it was they're going to step on the neck and, you know, Ohio State's going to hang around because they have the talent to always hang around. It's just the execution in the final sets for them is just not there. That could come. That's something that comes with experience. And once they find the right plays to make in those situations and draw up the right looks and get the right guys to make the right decisions, they're going to go a long way. It's just a matter of, like, right now they're just kind of an also-ran team. Like, they're around. They're not in my top 20 anymore. But they're around. I don't completely discount them.
Yeah, and kind of it's important to remember that last year they played at Notre Dame about the same time of the season, and they just weren't competitive with the Irish in that game. And that after that game, they were just world beaters from that point on. They beat Maryland at home. They were competitive in the Big Ten tournament, and they made it to the national title game. So the window is not closing for them. This is a team that could still very make a scary run in the Big Ten tournament and in the Big Ten. So, all right, Kyle, final segment, the Adam Sherlambides play of the week. Who are your candidates?
Numerous candidates. Behind the backs came back into style, like jean jackets. But for me, the Sherlambides play of the week was Tinney's double juke that sent his defender flying and led to a Key Hopkins goal against Virginia. I don't think anything was better all weekend. And I think the internet agrees with me.
Yeah, it was the viral highlight of the weekend. And it was just a ruthless breaking of ankles. Like, it's almost as if, like, don't be surprised if I meme this with, like, some Sarah McLachlan, like, thrown over it just to, like, it goes black and white and, like, the sad song from the puppy commercial comes on, or Simon and Garfunkel comes on, and just, like, because it was just, like, it's sad to see that level of cruelty towards ankles. Like, this was just, it was almost mean, but it was a great left-to-right split. What?
I can't believe you said the puppy commercial. I'm dying. Sorry. It's like an ASPCA commercial to make sure puppies don't die. Come on, man. Oh, we're gonna have to donate now because we made that joke. Oh no, that's terrible. All right, take us out from the left coast.
If you guys like the podcast, please tell a friend. Please leave a rating. Please subscribe. If you want to give us feedback, you can find me on Twitter @Dan_Abern. Kyle, where can they find you?
And you can find me, as always, @TheKyleDevitt on Twitter, Instagram, and SilentSwap.com. Restock coming soon. Check that out.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the listen. See you next week.